This is an IEEE Computer Society podcast. I'm David Alan Greer, and this is a special update for the podcast entitled Marketplace of Ideas. In the Marketplace of Ideas, we were talking about supercomputing and cluster computing and grid computing and all the other forms of high-end computation, particularly as it's been developed in the last 15 or so years. It has been a field that has been marked by rapid change. We've seen it go from the stretch computers of IBM in the late 1950s, through the machines of CDC, Cray Research, and other vendors, move on to cluster computing, and now be focused on the grid. What has been interesting about that, or perhaps interesting in an ironic sense, has been the willingness of people to change programs as they have changed from machine to machine. They would willingly devote large amounts of time and effort to converting a program from one architecture to another, all to squeeze out the greatest speed and the fastest cycles. As a young programmer, I can remember poring over a weather code, working at it line by line, each time trying to see what I could do to make sure that first it reproduced the same numbers on our machine as it did on the Cray Research machine, and second, to see what I could do to make it run faster. The first goal, frankly, was unattainable. The best we could get were numbers that were close. And in weather prediction, that's a tough thing. Weather prediction equations can be quite unstable. Small changes to the input can produce very large changes on the output. Nonetheless, you start with a target and you work to get it there. Getting the greater speed is in some ways easier, but in so doing, you're often flipping things around, exchanging memory, usually, for speed. If you take data and map out all of its different incarnations into a very large piece of memory, you can often set that up and let the computer chomp away at it without worrying about additional instructions and overhead, letting a background part of the machine work while other computations went forward in other ways. Still, those architectures and those instruction sets that made that possible tended to be of very short duration. And so we've had to invest large amounts of time and effort in converting codes. The government labs have played a relatively important role in this because they were often working on activities and problems that could stand the demands, that were willing to pay the resources needed to convert a program from one architecture to another. The most obvious one are the laboratories that deal with issues of national defense, Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, and indeed Argonne. These are doing work, fundamental physics work, that underlies some of the defense research and is indeed supported by the Department of Energy. They have staff that is willing to do this work, willing to see what happens because of the knowledge it gains. This isn't always true in the commercial world. Indeed, one of the great surprises in supercomputing came when the machines of the 80s, the large-scale Crays and their competitors, moved into industrial laboratories. They came at that point with a little more software. The early supercomputers would be moved into a large government lab with virtually no software, maybe an operating system, maybe an assembler, maybe compilers, but not much more. Corporations weren't willing to take that. They're also much more interested in packages, in solutions that came. In particular, structural analysis was important, and the ability to have a high-speed structural analysis program available. This put another layer between user and machine, a layer that stayed pretty fixed and pointed the way to the changes in computers, particularly high-speed computing. Increasingly, we would define our problems in terms of a structural analysis package, in terms of a mathematics package like Mathematica, in terms of a simulation package, and those would be the portable units. What has happened on the grid is that now the machine has become the portable unit again. It's a software machine, but it's an environment in which problems can be defined and will run the same way no matter where it's located or how it works. It's an interesting concept, and I'll be intrigued to see how it deploys into the commercial world. Right now, it's part of the research world. It has a certain applicability in commercial world, as we've seen from the fact that Argonne Labs now uses a commercial set of machines to do some of its research. But it's still fundamentally part of the research world. I think we will see it move outward in terms of data sourcing and other activities of commerce. But it will be truly intriguing to see where it moves from there. Where will it get to the desktop? And how will we think about it? Will we reach the point where our ideas, our work, our activities are defined in a software machine that becomes ours when we begin our careers and stays with us through all of our work until the day we retire? This has been a special update to In Our Time, to the podcast entitled The Marketplace of Ideas. It is the second update. This podcast was originally based on an essay that was published in the October 2009 issue of Computer, which is a publication of the Computer Society. More about Computer, the magazine, and the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. To find about Computer, the magazine, click on the Publications tab and go to the Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts, including the original one in this series, can be found at the bottom of the page. If you have any comments, we'd love to hear them. You can send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.